work and nurture your network, because you just never know when you might need a leg up, however experienced you are, from some of those people that you've met along the way.
Welcome to Communication Purpose. I'm John Higginson, founder of purpose-led communications agency Higginson Strategy. I believe that the best way to get a message across clearly is by talking about something you honestly and passionately believe in. By doing so, you bring people with you. Your passion becomes theirs, and I call this a power of purpose. Today, I'm joined by Catherine Thomas, the Chief Corporate Affairs Officer at Clarion Housing Group, the UK's largest housing association. They manage over 125,000 properties across more than 170 local authorities and provide homes for more than 350,000 people. Catherine has worked at Clarion for 5 years. Prior to that, among other jobs, she has been head of marketing at Land Securities, and she held the directorship of the British Fashion Council for nearly 10 years ago. She started her career at Debenhams in the mid-90s. Catherine, it's a real pleasure to have you on the show. Can you just tell us a bit about your journey to where you are today?
Well, I started in advertising agencies a long, long time ago, initially as a very bad PA. So bad, I was promoted into a more useful job, and then found myself in fashion PR, which was just fabulous, very lovely, very glamorous. And just, you know, the best place to be in the early and mid 90s, going all around the world, doing fashion shoots and fashion shows. It was fabulous. But
it sounds like absolutely fabulous, actually.
Was it fabulous?
Was it? Yeah.
In fact, some of my team still oscillate between calling me either Eddie or Miranda. And but I have to say, it after about 10 years, it did start to feel a little bit like Groundhog Day. Every 6 months, it was another shoot or another show. And, you know, it was amazing. I'm not grumbling at all. And it was an incredible learning ground. But I did start to get to a point where I fancied building something and doing something more tangible, and found myself in real estate, running big marketing campaigns and working for Landsec, and then more recently now in housing, leading the corporate affairs team, and really genuinely feel like we are making a difference for residents and communities across England.
So just tell us a bit more about what Clarion Housing Group does then. So you're the landlord, are you?
We are the landlord, and we also we own and maintain homes. Fabulous introduction, thank you very much. So I won't repeat that. But we're, as well as owning and maintaining those homes, we're investing around £1 million a day in repairs and maintenance. And over the last 10 years, we've built over 10,000 new homes. So we've got about 1,700 people into employment. We do an awful lot of work with skills and training. Almost all of our homes are in urban areas where our residents are able, as much as they possibly can, to sustain their tenancies through work. So helping young people and older people with digital skills to make them as job ready as possible is critical to us. We also help a lot of communities. We spent nearly 20 million helping people and communities last year. And that ladders up to an enormous number of social value, over 120 million last year in social value. So, yes, we own and maintain our properties, but we also take sustaining tenancies and getting people into work really seriously.
Now, that all sounds wonderful and very purposeful, and the reason you're on the show. Doesn't seem like it's a natural same environment as the kind of Stolly and Bolly world of fashion PR. Is there anything that you brought across from the world of fashion that's helpful in your job today?
Well, very, very same principles. Of course, some different tactics, but it's really about how do we make people care about our message and our purpose. So whether you're a fashion brand or whether you're a housing landlord, it's really about using our influence to advocate to those policymakers or those people who help you shape your external environment. So a lot of those principles are exactly the same when you're a communicator. But of course, you need to know your product, you need to know your stakeholders, you need to know what matters to your audience, you need to pull and push the different levers. It's really about communicating with consistency and clarity, keeping it really simple. Being really, really clear about what you want your organisation to be famous for, and not having a list as long as your arm about what those things are. Thinking about using your power to convene stakeholders and advocates and your customers so you really understand them.
Great. Some really good messages there on, how to plan really and strategize for messaging. Keep it simple and don't have too many different things. People do find it hard to concentrate. And quite often it's always said in politics, if you're it's only once you're absolutely completely bored silly of your message that maybe someone might have heard it. That's what you have to think about. What's been one of your biggest communications wins over the years?
Well, in the last year, I think making sure that the Clarion CEO was in front of new government ministers within weeks of the latest election was a real win. That's actually quite a hard one. It's taken probably years of groundwork, making sure that the incoming administration knew who we were. Why we were so critical to helping them deliver their missions, their pledges, getting the team in front so that they can articulate some of those messages and demonstrate how, through collaboration, we can collectively help them achieve their goals, was really important. I think we run regular campaigns to help to encourage residents to change some long-held behaviours, and whether that's allowing us access into their homes, for us to do something as basic as gas safety checks, sounds incredibly boring, but unless we do, their homes are not safe. So a lot of what we do in terms of behavioural shift. Also encouraging more residents and especially during COVID to adopt more digital skills. Up and down the country, we were lending devices both to encourage residents to continue to pay their bills and not get into arrears, but also for children to be able to do their homework. In many of those homes where there are res vulnerable residents and where there is extreme poverty, schools were expecting children to complete homework online and they didn't have access to any devices. So a lot of what we were doing was getting devices to those homes so they could do that.
Well, that's so much more than just a landlord, isn't it? And I doubt if many people would have any idea that a company called Clarion Housing Group is doing those kind of things, providing digital devices for children to do their homework and things like that. It just goes to show how it takes a whole host of different organisations working together to provide the kind of services and how much more deep your service really runs than simply being a landlord. Have you ever had a failure in your a career that you've just absolutely put your head in your hands about?
Oh, yes, I had a really big one. I was seduced to go and work in the Middle East about 10 years ago. I was attracted by the sunshine, the lifestyle, the money, and I completely bombed. My version of delivering in a in that kind of environment was wrong. And I did stay for about 18 months, just under 18 months, but it taught me an enormous amount of humility
And
that,
what was the job? What was the job?
It was building and leading a team to set up a new department store in the Middle East, and you know, we did it. I did it, but I didn't enjoy it, and I certainly came back to the UK with my tail between my legs, and had felt like I had to start all over again. But you know, what saved me was my incredible network of people that I had nurtured over the last, you know, 10, over the previous 10 to 15 years. And so many of them helped me. And I think a message to younger people who are building their careers is to really work and nurture your network, because you just never know when you might need a leg up, however experienced you are, from some of those people that you've met along the way.
Well, look, in the dark UK that we are in the moment in January, I'm sure there's a lot of people that are thinking about places like Dubai and thinking, wouldn't it be lovely to be somewhere hot and not have to pay any tax whatsoever? Or won't that be great? And beach and all those things. Tell us what was the thing? Can you pinpoint the thing that you got so wrong with in that change of culture?
I think I assumed that because I built a very successful career in marketing, advertising, communications, and PR, that I pretty much could hit the ground running and I knew everything there was to know about my specialist area. And I went into an environment, a culture, a country where communications is done so completely different. And of course, that sounds wonderfully obvious, but actually, it was a little bit like landing on Mars, frankly. You know, they consume communications in a way that was so different to the way we do in the UK, the US, and Australia, you know, territories which I'd had some experience of before. And I don't think I had nearly enough humility going in to that environment at that time. Plus, building a very much an international team from scratch, so pulling cultures from all over the world to come and work in this new environment, and building that team, that wasn't something that I'd done before. Obviously, I'd worked with different nationalities and cultures before, but building a team completely from scratch, that were also so new to that environment too, was a real challenge. So, you know, there were some things I got right while I was there, but overall, I would sort of class it, as you've asked me the question about a failure in my career. That's definitely one, but one I've learned from. You know, I learned a great deal about, you know, what I knew and what I didn't know, and relearning, being prepared to keep learning and relearning, is a critical nature of, you know, the way you need to behave.
And what is it, the difference in the way that the Middle East is consuming news saying, or is it around the relationships? You need to have the relationships. What was that?
Relationships is of course important, but different because so many people are transient. So whereas in the UK you might have relationships with journalists, with politicians, with local authorities and council leaders, there's so much transience in terms of people who were there. So long-held relationships are not necessarily as important. It is a much, much smaller group of influencers. And I would say 10 years ago, they were much more experienced at social media than perhaps we were in the UK. There was a much greater level of trust, I suppose, at social media, but also much less trust in terms of traditional media. And also in some areas like the Middle East, the messaging has got much more regulation control around it. So the creativity to a large extent is more constrained. Yeah, I mean, you know, in hindsight, so many of those things seem so obvious now, but certainly 10 years ago, they weren't obvious to me.
Interesting. What do you find the most effective form of communication?
There is absolutely no silver bullet in terms of one most effective form of communication. You know, as you said at the beginning, you know, often it's about saying the same thing over and over and over again, until you've started to bore people. which can be dangerous because then at that stage you become irrelevant. I think what we have got used to over the last 3 or 4 years, especially when you're in a housing crisis, which has been on the brink and probably is now in a housing emergency, the sector has become very adept at using stats and data to make their point. And I think we now need to move to a place where we are using more evidence. I'm always incredibly impressed by the NHS and scientists who use evidence to craft their messaging in order to extract more funding. And I think we need to turn some of those data and stats into modelling and evidence and translate them into the number of homes, either positively or negatively, that are going to be impacted by decision making. And I think, we as a sector need to use much more evidence-led communications to make the point. So, I don't think there is any single form of comms that works better than another. It's always going to be a programme of activity that's going to shift the dial. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to learn from academics on that.
Good. And what do you, for pleasure, what, where do you get your news from?
Oh, everywhere. Podcasts. I'm an avid listener of podcasts, especially political podcasts.
Which one's your favorite?
Oh, the rest is politics and the news agents. Also political thinking. I listen in the morning. I get the train in from Berkshire into London, and I listen to the Today programme and Times Radio, and I oscillate between the two depending on who's on and who's doing the big interviews. Every morning I read the Times, the Telegraph, the FT, Housing Today, Inside Housing, and the Guardian. And at the weekends, I usually buy the Sunday Times, the Telegraph, and the FT Weekend. So I'm a bit of a news junkie, and
You
I'm
really are. You really are.
constantly consuming sort of news and mostly politics.
Oh, very good. Now, Higginson Strategy works with a number of purpose-led organisations. Are there any that you've seen that we work with that you admire?
I absolutely love the work you've done with the WASPI campaign. I think I think it's a really, really hard challenge to make a difference, but it has cut through, and I do think that there is a greater level of awareness of how women's pensions have been impacted by decades of decision making or non-decision making. And I think what you've done with that campaign is you've really brought it to life. And you've really spread the message to a greater, a larger proportion of the audience. You've made it matter to us, which is what I was talking about earlier.
Well, thank you. And it's also down to the great hard work of all those WASPI women. It's such a emotive campaign, and we just need the Labour government now to actually do what it said it was going to do when it was in opposition. Final question: if you could have dinner with anyone alive or dead, who would it be?
Winston Churchill's wife, Clementine, Clemmy.
Very good.
I think she just, the most incredible, impressive lady, the real power behind the throne, and had as much impact almost on the war effort as he did. So I would love to spend an evening around a dinner table with her amongst a few others.
Catherine Thomas, Chief Corporate Affairs Officer at Clarion Housing Group. You've been speaking to me, John Higginson, on Communicating Purpose. Thank you.